Welcome to the Shipping Podcast, a multi-fandom podcast for the shipper in you. Hosted by Shirazade, your friendly mod, OTP shipper, and fandom old.
First of all, I hope all of you are safe, especially if you've decided to make your voices heard in the streets. I keep saying this podcast is a happy space, but I feel as if I'd be ignoring burning fire in the room if I didn't state clearly that all lives don't matter until black lives matter. That it's not enough to not be racist, that those of us with privilege have to be actively anti-racist in order to change things. That I might not be American, but that racism is a worldwide problem. Also, I've decided to take a bit of a summer break after this episode. I'll be back in August with more great guests and amazing OTPs. However, before this break, I'm leaving you with this nice long conversation I had with the lovely Perlock Annel, who volunteered to talk with me about the comfort ship of Enjolras and Grantaire from Victor Hugo's Les Misérables, probably best known as a musical.
But what's a ship, you might ask? It's an abbreviation for relationship and can be used as a noun or verb. I ship Kirk / Spock, or my favorite ship is Spirk. Meaning, you would like to see Star Trek's Kirk and Spock as a couple, and are using one of the popular ship names, smushing their names together in a way that can be cutesy or cringy, depending on your point of view. This podcast will be zero judgment, 100% squee, as fans talk about their ships, why they ship them, and which fanworks might make you ship them too. At the end, each guest will nominate the next fan to talk about their OTP, that's one true pairing, i.e. they ship the love the most, creating a multi-ship, multi-fandom chain of interviews. Het, i.e. straight couples, / meaning same-sex pairings, fictional characters or real people. The only limit is the imagination. Sound like something you might enjoy? Please give it a listen and let me know what you think. The Shipping Cast is hosted on shippingcast.fandomish.net. That's fandom, ish.net, where you can find show notes and subscribe on various podcasting platforms. There's also a Tumblr at shippingcast, a Twitter at shipping_cast, or you can email me on theshippingcast@fandomish.net, where you could also send me a recorded voice message for inclusion in a future show. I'm very open to questions and opinions about the ships we talk about or shipping in general, so please get in touch. Because I've had to start paying for pro accounts for this podcast, I set up a Patreon on patreon.com/shippingcast, in addition to the Ko-fi and PayPal links that you can find on shippingcast.fandomish.net/support. Would you like me to record some episodes that cover more general aspects of fandom instead of being limited to ships? One of the Patreon perks is special episodes, and you can even vote on the topics. A note in advance. As mentioned before, this podcast is a judgment-free zone. My guests are here to share what they love, not to defend themselves. We ship and let ship here, and any flames, i.e. hateful messages, will be used to roast marshmallows, to use old-school fandom lingo. This expression dates me, I know. I'm actually 39 now, and have been writing fanfiction since I hit puberty. However, I only joined online fandom in 2001, which was also when I started writing fic in English. My native language is Swiss German, in case you were wondering, and I have the equivalent of an MA in Culture Anthropology, Media Studies and German Literature. These days I work an admin job in the renewable energy sector, and I spend my free time consuming media in the form of books, movies, TV shows and podcasts. I find fandom fascinating, not just as a creative outlet in the form of writing, reading and gifting, but as a cultural phenomenon. I hope I'm not the only one who loves to hear people talk about their passions, and there are few things fans are more passionate about than their ships. The ship that we focus on in each episode is clearly stated in the title, so if you think that the ship will cause you distress or anger, please skip the episode. It's also quite likely that there'll be spoilers, so in the immortal words of River Song...
Spoilers.
Perlock turned out to be a gold star interview partner, prepared to answer all my questions about Enjolras and Grantaire, and who'd have thought there was so much to discuss about a ship that originates in a 19th century novel. Although admittedly, we don't only talk about Les Misérables, getting sidetracked more than once. but I figure you guys deserve a nice long treat before the break. So let's dive right in.
I took a trip on a great big ship to a land across the sea. To a land across the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea,
the sea. So, hi, Prologue Anhul. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm doing good.
So, yeah, that's nice. That's nice.
Yeah, I've been working today and prepping for this, but also mostly I had to drive down to our capital city to go and pick up.
Are you allowed to go outside again?
We're allowed to go outside if we can't do our jobs from home. I can do my job from home, and my job is I'm considered I'm considered a
essential worker.
That's it, essential worker. And I had to go to work to and grab. Mm-hmm. The posts, I have to do that once a week. And yeah. Wales, out of the four nations of the United Kingdom, we're the only ones who are still in lockdown, to a certain degree. Like, mm-hmm. Scotland started before us, and England, England has been trying to get forward on. Like, I think they were the first ones to lift everything.
Yeah. Now here it's really strange to think that now, you know, like cinemas are open again, and it's what? Like, and my gym is up. My gym's been open since mid-May. I haven't set foot in it. I'm personally still like two phases further back. I did visit my brother for my nephew's birthday. It was lovely. My mom was able to come. His other grandparents were able to come. It was really awesome. But like when it comes to public spaces, I'm still key. Like I'm not going to the gym. Are you mad? It's like
I miss the gym. Like I do martial arts. That's my keep fit thing. Learning a new skill. And
That sucks.
I mean, I've got the stuff I could do at home, but
yeah,
my problem is self-motivating myself to go to the gym is like, I'd much rather sit and read fan fiction and write fan fiction and drink tea and coffee.
Now, I've been really good actually during lockdown. I dusted off my old aerobics DVDs, and ooh, I've been doing aerobics every couple of days, every 2 days. So yeah.
Nice.
So that was pretty good. Maybe because I've been horribly creatively blocked, you know, my depression doesn't really cope very well with uncertainty.
Yeah, my anxiety has definitely been flaring up in the last week or so. But otherwise, like, the thing that truly sets off my anxiety more than anything else is my social being in, not in big crowded spaces, but like I find I get more stressed with like constantly having to meet up with people and like keeping up with mm-hmm. them, because I have dyspraxia, which means my timekeeping is a bit like, well, as you saw,
we're here now, and we're going to actually not be talking about horrible corona and stupid lockdowns and anxiety and having to be social. We're going to talk about the wonderful, wonderful distraction that is fandom.
Woohoo!
Yes. And you're another lovely person from my backup list, saving my ass. So I don't have to go into an involuntary hiatus the way I had to do last year.
Honestly, I'm actually a massive fan of the podcast. I've been listening like intermittently, like and catching up since the Padme and Anakin episode. So this is like, I literally screamed when I saw your email, which is totally a normal response. Apologies.
Yeah, and you're probably like the most organized of all my interview partners ever. You showed me you have flashcards.
This is actually because when I record my podcast, Queer Waters, we've actually had to learn how to make stuff, organized, flashcards and scripts, because that was not something that came naturally to us. But that's where, but since then, I'm like, okay, I'm recording something. I'm public speaking. I need my flashcards, and I need them to be color coded so I know what I'm talking about at all times.
Wow. So you're also someone who likes to look at pop culture.
Yeah.
And is your podcast out yet? Can we listen?
I want to say yes, but if not, I'm sorry. It's going to be coming out. I'll definitely email you if it's out or not when this podcast goes up on Patreon.
I'm always up for a queer reading of pop culture and media.
Yes. Our first podcast is a bit a story of two tales, because we recorded it over two nights and we decided the second half was much better. But it's about Frozen and Elsa.
Okay. Nice. I've seen the first one. I haven't seen the second one.
Talk about both. There's definitely a focus on Frozen 1 over Frozen 2, mm-hmm. but Frozen 2 does get talked about.
Yeah, I will definitely be listening. Definitely. Yeah. And yeah, so what is your fandom background that led you to wanting to make your own podcast?
My fandom background is a bit varied. I'm going to go with just, this is not necessarily in chronological order, but
no way.
The big one for me during the 2000s was Harry Potter with MuggleNet and MuggleCast. And I went to all of the book launches with my friend. I then got into the series of Unfortunate Events fandom. I remember guessing the title of the book that went on to become the penultimate peril with my mum. Then I was in the Torchwood fandom, and I actually wrote fic for that. I'm not going to tell you where that fic is. I don't even think it's under my name, under Paralogue Annual name. But it's, I was really into Japanese, and so much so that my dog is actually called Yanto.
Aww.
And
he's still alive. Yes, your dog.
Yeah, Yanto's still alive. He's currently downstairs cuddling with my mum.
Mm-hmm. So living his best dog life.
Yes. After that, I was on the Glee forum, which Glee is a show that's definitely seen better days. But I wrote a fanfic role play thing. It was something like a hybrid of both.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing, big fandom I was in, and I'm going to come back around to this one, obviously, it was Les Mis, and I was in the first Welsh production of that.
Okay.
Because that was done by my drama teacher.
Wow.
Yeah. And to just run through fandoms I've gone through in order since then. Batman, Marvel, Hamilton, Coco, and I've actually got a fic going on for that. And now currently It. And I'm writing a fic.
Okay. Have you listened to our It podcast?
Yes, you need to do an update. So many things have happened.
That would be a first. I could do it as a Patreon special.
I would scream again.
But yeah, so what type of fan are you? Do you usually have one OTP, or are you multi-ship?
I mostly do Jen, actually, but if I do ship, it kind of, I have multi-ships, but usually when I do have an OTP, that OTP does tend to be the dominant pairing in all the things, mm-hmm. For example, in Les Mis, for example, I ship Andros and Granter, but I also ship Bosue, Jolie and Musiqueta. Combophile and Eponine, Marius, Eponine and Cosette, and Cosette and Eponine. So there's some multi-shipping going on more than minor characters, but I have in the past had major, my big ship has been part of like has been composed of smaller ships, if that makes sense.
And do you usually write fanfic for the fandoms that you're in?
Yes. Yeah. Whether that fanfic sees the light of day depends on how much I've written, if I've finished it, and or if enough people have nagged me to finish it.
Oh, you're so much kinder to your readers than I am. I just like, oh, I have an idea, let's start. And then I post it, and then I'm like, oh, I have another idea, let's post that one. And then that one, I have so many unfinished works on AO3. I think people are starting to hate me.
That's a mood. But like, with the Coco fanfic, I have two readers. And I have, my problem is, I have like, I think actually I may have five readers, but the point being, I feel so incredibly guilty. if I, like, the guilt just starts piling up.
Yeah.
Until I'm just sitting there going, okay, I'll write chapter 9, I'll write chapter 10, I'll write chapter 12, I'm sorry. And like, I have actually written chapter 9, if people are wondering. I just, I'm keeping to my promise of like not releasing that until the lockdown's over.
Yeah, I think it's a bit, for me, the problem is a bit that right now I'm mostly writing in the Untamed fandom, and that's huge. It has so many incredibly talented fanfic writers, you know? So yeah. I've started, like, I don't know, a bodyguard AU. There's tons of those out there already, so it's not as if, you know, I'm filling, like, a niche or something, so I don't really feel the pressure so much.
That's fair.
Except for like the two people who come back and are like, are you still blocked? Will you continue?
Yeah, I have one of the girls who follow Vampire AU. She does beautiful art really quickly. And like, I'll start talking to her about stuff, and then we'll start end up talking about the fic. And then she'll start theorizing, and I'll be like, I need to finish this just for you. Because like, sometimes I'm like, sometimes just that person on their own sometimes just kind of turns up at my hypothetical door and is like, yeah, have some art. No, let me chapter 8.
Wow.
The artist I mentioned who knocked on my door, I commissioned her to do 5 pieces of fan art, and I loved one of them so much it's the background to my phone, and it's one of my OCs. I've got friends also in the same writing group, and every time they see my phone, they're like, her art. And I'm like, yes, it is.
So, of all the fandoms that you mentioned, why did you pick Les Mis?
First of all, it's like my comfort ship. So, if I'm having like a rough time, or if I'm between fandoms, I sometimes just drift back to it. It's actually has a big role in my life, kind of. When I was in the aforementioned production, I was 14, and I was coming out of the closet as bisexual. And I kind of was reading about the production, not the production, the book. And there was like something like, what's the word if there's there's a controversy. And there's like controversies about sexuality on Wikipedia. That was the heading. I was like, oh, I've got to read this. And then I found out that Andrew was gay. Oh, not gay, bisexual, canonically, possibly. And I was like,
so he was kind of queer coded.
Yeah, he's very queer coded, and sometimes it's not even code. I remember going, oh, it's fine to be bisexual. It's fine. This is good.
It was, you know, it was like the 7th. When was it written, the book? 1800s?
I'll tell you now. I've got my copy of the book on my desk.
Anyways, you know, like, it's been hundreds of years, and there were already gay people, you know, using gay as like an umbrella term. Queer
it
people.
Was, homosexuality was coined after the book. I think it was coined in, I want to say the 1890s. Could be slightly earlier, but I don't think it was Les Mis times, if that makes sense.
When you read something like that, you just kind of realize, you know, we've always been there.
Yes, that. Les Mis was written in 1862. Sorry, I looked it up in my. I've got both copy. I've got a French copy on my desk and the Doherty translation. The Doherty English translation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And yeah,
I've been trying to remember if I've read it because I had a phase where I read all those like Count of Monte Cristo and all those like. I had a huge like Victor Hugo face and all those, and I was like, did I read Les Misérables? I'm like, no, I don't think so because it's so sad.
Yeah, I mean, I did. I'm gonna be honest. It's one of those books that's always on my desk of like, I need to read this, mm-hmm. and I am easily distracted by anything. Mm-hmm. So. It's been on my desk for 7 years, or not 7 years. Yeah, 7 years is since I've had a translation of Les Mis on my mm-hmm. desk. So I understand. But also my reasons are it's long and I have an awful attention span. And
Oh yeah, I mean if I had read it, it would have been when I was a teenager and I was still devouring books as if there was no tomorrow. It was like because I didn't have the internet, so you know, what was I supposed to do?
That's a mood. I mean, I'm 25, but I do remember my father, his job, like we were lucky enough to have a computer in the house like when I was quite young, mm-hmm. but my dad was the only one allowed to use it, and I definitely didn't remember learning about fan fiction. So I remember devouring books. I could go for an entire book series in a week.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Somehow I never discovered. We had the internet pretty early. I think Switzerland was pretty and was quite early in that respect. And also when my dad, he needed to write his sermons. My dad's a Baptist minister. And yes, that's weird. I know. But when he had to write his sermons and stuff, so he switched pretty early from like a typewriter to a computer, and when he gets something, then he always got the best. So we had a Mac at home with internet, ISDN internet access, so we could talk on the phone and be online at the same time. it was all in my dad's office, and you know, so I would go. I had an email address, but I didn't know anyone who I could email. So yeah, so that's when I read all those huge books when I was like 14, 15, 16, that age. But I don't think I ever read Les Mis. And I had to look up who Enjolras and Grantaire are. Oh my God, this is going to be so difficult. French, English, my head, German. It's like...
I'm going to put a big like blanket warning here to any French speakers. I haven't studied French since I was in GCSE. So that was like when mm-hmm. I was 15, Steve. And I haven't... But I do good French, so my pronunciations may sound a bit odd. But no, I completely understand.
Just, you know, when I could just hear myself when I was saying their names. And then, like, no.
I understand. My first language is not English, it's Welsh.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So I say if I was saying, I have sometimes for certain things, I'll go, rather than say really, I'd say really, like I put a trill on my R because...
Speak Welsh. I cannot do that, those things with the R's. It's impossible.
If it makes you feel any better, I find it hard to say. I did German for like a few weeks once, and one of your letters, it hurts my mouth. So we're in a similar boat where we're like, I appreciate and love your language, but also,
Because in Switzerland, we are very aware of the fact we learn standard German. That's our first language in school. We are constantly told that what you're speaking, it's not standard German.
I completely understand, because in Wales, we don't really have a standardized Welsh. We have two different dialects of Welsh, which is...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a secret kind of like thing. Oh dear, I've spilled the beans. Oh dear. But like in North Wales, and oh god, if there's any North Wales people here, I'm sorry. I did live in North Wales for 5 years, and I'm sorry. But they speak very quickly, like much quicker than like not quicker. They have like a more of like a trill and like not trill. They speak. But it's really fast and really like a lot of the like the vowels seem to be slightly more elongated than ours, and the consonants same thing. But to be fair, they can't understand me when I'm speaking in the South Wales dialect. And I went to university in North Wales to study languages with a North Wales teacher. This was great.
But yeah, okay, languages. Yeah, just so people know that we will probably mess up the names to the French words.
Yes.
Apologies. It's not because we don't know better. It's just because it happens.
Yes, and also, like, we understand that there's multiple dialects of French.
Yeah. But then Swiss French is different again.
Oh,
we
God.
Count differently, for example. We count logically.
Okay.
Our, you know, like 80 in French.
Yeah.
Is 80.
Yeah.
Which is 4 times 20.
Yeah.
But we say 80, which is 80.
That's actually, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. It's interesting because we have something similar in Welsh, where randomly after 15 to 18, it's 15 and 1, 15 and 2, 15 and 3, and then it becomes, I think it's like 17 is 15 and 2, then 19 is 15 and 4, but 18 is 2 nines.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's... sometimes one wonders how these things, you know, kind of happen.
Yeah. I understand all of the language pains. I'm there with you.
But yeah, okay, so French, France, Les Misérables. We're talking today about a particular ship, and I think the whole thing started when I tried to say the names of the characters, Enjolras and Grantaire, because I had to look them up. I did not know who they were. I kind of knew, you know, like the characters that, like, Hugh Jackman and Russell Crowe played in the movie, but I didn't know anyone else.
That's fair. I mean, to be fair, if you're in any of, like, if you're in, like, and not in the online fandom, I guess, let's put it like that, everyone is kind of like Valjean and Javert and Cosette and Fantine, occasionally in like musical theatre, who are not aware of, who are not like the straight part of musical theatre, I've heard certain people call Eponine because of On My Own. But it seems to be much more of an online phenomenon, where there's like a focus on the amis de abysse. Would you want me to explain whom they are for you, in like with some quotes from the book?
Yeah.
Okay, so Enjolras, he is leader of the student rebel group called Les Amis de Abyssé, which is a pun on Abyssé. So it's spelled ABC, but because ABC is pronounced Abyssé, and Abyssé, spelled in a different way, means the wretched. So
okay.
ABSSE, so they're friends of the wretched.
Mm-hmm.
In the book and in a lot of productions, he is a beautiful golden blonde, and this is accentuated in the book because his nickname, our nickname, or Grantaire's nickname for him is, and in the book, some fun quotes from the book that describe him. He is a charming young man capable of being terrible, the marble lover of liberty, and he's canonical, like, this is not a quote, this is just me condensing it, but canonically he's not interested in women, like, in the book. That's, like, one of the lines. A woman has never passed him by, or something like that. Meanwhile, Grantaire, or R, because in French, of course, Grand Air is a capital R. He's a cynical drunk who is also a member of the, I'm just going to call them the Amis, or ABC, if that's okay, rather than saying the full name of the group every time. He's an ugly, in the book he's described as ugly, and he's a bit of an ass, to be honest. He makes witty remarks, but is friendly. I'm not sure if I said this before, but he's drunken. This is usually like his, in most productions, that's like how they signify that's Grantor, the guy drinking in the corner. And also he is in love with Enjolras. And I've got some more quotes from the book. It's his only obsession, and Grantor admired, loved, and revered Enjolras. During the big, like, rebellion with the barricades at the end, he sleeps through it, but wakes up just as Enjolras is about to be shot and dies with him.
Tragic.
Yeah, but it's possibly like, it's one of the very few times I can go, it's also like one of the most shippy moments in the entire book.
Yeah.
So it's to the point, it's like got its own pile of tropes in it. It's mm-hmm. great. Some stuff from like some different productions. So, and productions and media. So in the musical, the movie, and the BBC show, which I haven't really seen, but apparently he is like in these productions, he's usually very, like, a lot of his focus is actually, one of his issues with the revolution is that he's worried about his friends that they're going to die, which they sadly do. Spoilers. I'm sorry if anyone hasn't read them. I mean, the book is 160 years old.
And the podcast is, as always, comes with a spoiler warning, so, you know.
Yes. The book, in the book, he is seen as a womanizer, and he knows a lot of things. Like, he does counter combat. I think he quotes philosophers at some point. I'm not 100% sure on that, mm-hmm. but he just knows a lot. But also he knows specifically a lot about Paris. Like, they have an entire section of a paragraph just based on how much knowledge he has of Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the two players in the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you already mentioned why, like, especially Grantaire's bisexuality kind of spoke to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it was unavoidable that you would ship these two.
Just a little bit. Yeah. It's very much a ship that just, I just keep coming back to it, and I'm like, yeah, this ship.
Yeah, so you mentioned that, like, the death scene was, like, very one of the most romantic ones. Do they have, like, other, like, interactions that yes. stick out to you?
Not necessarily. They're not super shippy moments, but they're, mm-hmm. like, I'm going to go through this book, musical, and then everything else. That's all right. Mm-hmm. We meet them in the chapter, the group that nearly became historic, and they fight a lot and clash because, as the book explains, they are diametrically opposed. The skeptic attracted to the believer is as elementary colours. We are drawn to what we lack. No one loves daylight as much as a blind man. But almost until the end, the ship is very much one-sided. Mm-hmm. And throughout the book, and this is like something that, like, this is like queer coding for like 19th century. Like, if they wanted to say they're queer, they would compare them to Greek romances. So Hugo and maybe I think Bronte spent a lot of time like comparing them to Orestes and Pylades, Alexander and Hephaestion, and Achilles and Patrocles.
Yeah. The proto-gays.
Yeah, proto-gays. if I say E-R, that's because I'm reading directly from my notes, and then I'm like, oh dear. Enjolras, like, not a very shippy moment, but it's like, I'm going to start with this. A shippable moment for me is they're having an argument in the book about something. And they say, And Eldora says, "You don't believe in anything." And Grantor turns to him and goes, "I believe in you."
Oh.
Yeah.
How is that? That is very shippy, though.
Yeah, that is very... Yeah.
Okay. So, Grantor is definitely the blind man in the analogy with the light.
Yes. Grantor is very much just... There's a line, another line in his introduction where he's like, he's subjugated by Andoros because he's just so in love with him. And he doesn't care at all for the cause. He just cares for this one guy and calls him a marvelous statue and says, "I believe in you." Not necessarily everything else, "I believe in you." But also they have like arguments, and they argue all the time in the book, to the point like they say, at one point, Andoros just shouts him, "Be serious." And Grantor responds, "I am wild." Like, it's just such a bizarre but also great line. I love it. But unfortunately, it's not like how their ship has a kind of, like, there's a hint of a confirmedness, but it gets worse before it gets better, if that makes sense. Because during the barricade, Andoros turns to Grantor, because Grantor gets drunk in the corner and starts falling asleep. He turns to Grantor and he says, "You haven't the will to do anything, to believe, to think, to live, or to die." And Grantor responds, "You'll see," which that's Andoros' last words to him. And then because Grantor immediately just basically face plants and goes to sleep until dawn, which is when Andoros is about to be shot, because he's been, one, identified as leader, and also he's the last man standing. Grantor wakes up, and because it's the silence that wakes him, not the chaos. And he stands up and walks up to next to Andoros, and he says to the guard, "Long live the Republic, I am one of them. Kill us with the same shot." And turns to Andoros and goes, "Permet tu," which is, "Will you permit it?" And Andoros smiles at him and takes his hand. And that sounds like a really, like, they're then shot, but also that. It's like...
That is like Romeo and Juliet tragedy.
Yeah. It's like...
You're like, it's so sad, but it's also beautiful, kind of.
Yeah, and you're like, "Yay, my ship! Oh no, they're dead!"
Look at this ship setting sail and, oh my god, drowning.
"Stop blowing holes in my ship!" Literally.
Oh, literally, yeah. But the same bullet for both of them. Wow.
Yeah, and yeah, some... small things.
I just realized that I kind of skipped the part where we tell people what exactly Les Misérables is about if they haven't read it. I mean, you know, they can probably tell that it's set in France during the revolution.
It is. Yeah, it's not set during the revolution. I'm going to have to... This is like a really big misconception. It's set during the June Rebellion of 1832. The French Revolution was in 1790.
1792, yeah.
Yeah. So there's like,
okay,
40-year difference.
It's been too long since I had history. Oh my god.
This is like... I've played... Partly because of Les Mis, I played Assassin's Creed Unity. So I have like... a strange level of knowledge about this one, of like the French Revolution and the June Rebellion and how they're not the same thing. I don't blame you. I just went looking into this because the amount of, because this is what being a fan is. It's looking into things, into the minutiae detail, and then being like, yes, this.
And why doesn't everyone know this?
Yeah. That's
but, you know, so it just goes to show how useful video games can be.
Oh, Assassin's Creed. The Assassin's Creed franchise is, like, I wouldn't say it's great for education because it's, you know, certain section. Like, it's still fiction, guys. Unfortunately, the Templars definitely were killed off. And, like, I don't know when the Templars were killed off, but it wasn't... Assassin's Creed, like, they, in the newer games, they've been putting this like thing in where they have an education version of it, where you can walk through, I think it's the two games are set in ancient Greece and ancient Egypt, and you can walk through these two places and learn about things from that time period. And they actually have a sort of system like that in older games where I know in Assassin's Creed Unity, they have like an encyclopedia and they'll teach you about like certain things and certain people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some of it's a bit biased or some of it's been edited to be like, it was the Templars, guys. It's interesting.
But yeah, so it's set during the June Revolution. The
Rebellion.
June Rebellion, yeah.
It's the June Rebellion of 1832. And the rest of... the book really follows Jean Valjean, who is a convict who stole a loaf of bread, very famously. And he then broke his parole, then kind of, due to... complicated circumstance, runs into a, has a, kicked out a worker named Fantine, whom has a daughter named Cosette. Fantine dies, and Jean Valjean goes and rescues Cosette from evil inn owners. All of his time, he's also being chased by a police officer named Javert. Some other things happen in this part of the book, and I can't really remember them off the top of my head. He then ends up in Paris with Cosette, like 15 years later, and Cosette, Marius falls in love with Cosette, and Cosette slowly falls in love with Marius. Marius's best friend is a girl named Eponine, and she knows where, she's the daughter of the pub owners from earlier, and they, she finds out where Cosette lives, at least in the musical. This is the point where my brain can't really remember the book very well. And, meanwhile, Marius has a bunch of friends who are revolutionaries and they think they're going to change the world. And there's a big battle. And among other things, Cosette decides to leave for Britain or America. I don't remember which. And Marius decides, well, my love has gone and abandoned me. So I'm going to go and join my friends at this barricade. And we're going to, I'm going to die. And it's going to be, wholly very romantic. And Jean Valjean just turns up and is like, I'm going to have to save this idiot now. And he turns up the barricade and saves Marius, and he's like the only one who lives from that. And then Jean Valjean tells him who he is. And then Marius and Cosette, that was me being tired, I apologise. Marius and Cosette get married and they live happy ever after and everyone else is dead.
Dead. And... Enjolras is one of the revolutionary friends.
He's the leader. He's the leader in red.
So more of a supporting role then.
Yeah, it's more of like a background character. Like mm-hmm. I actually counted it in my English translation. He has about 500 pages. He's in the book. And the book is like 1,500 pages. So, you know, he's not a key guy. But Enjolras and Grant are in it for 500 pages, so they're in it for a third. They're the equivalent of, like, you go into a movie and there's these characters, but the ones I'm interested in are the background guys who you only see, like, in the control room or something, or in, like... yeah.
And, so what's the fandom like?
The fandom as a whole, it's... was mostly like alive during 2012 and 2014 because that was when just after the musical came out. It was after the 25th anniversary, so there was a lot of stuff going on. But as was proven by last week for me, it revives every 5th of June for like one night and then goes back to sleep for a year.
Okay.
And like we were trending at like first and second in on the Europe Tumblr at one point last week. It was great. And it's a modern lot, like in the more recent fix, there's a lot of modern AUs, more than there is canon, but there is like an exploration of canon. There's some interesting fanon things too, like due to like the comments about colours, Grantier always is shown in green because one, that's the colour of a bottle of wine, and also diametrically opposed to Enjolras, who's the leader in red. And okay. he is that's meant to be Revolution. He always lives with either Bosue Musichetta or Jolie or Eponine. And in most modern AUs, he has low self-esteem and depression. Fanon Andreas is seen as pan or demi-romantic. Never like, mm-hmm. or maybe pan and demi-romantic, but he's never straight up. I've only once or twice come across a fic where he's gay. That's only once or twice.
Yeah, I guess it's extrapolating from the line that you mentioned that he was never interested in women. So, you know, it's probably, and he doesn't seem to be interested in Grantaire at first either. So,
yeah.
So I guess Demi is kind of,
accurate. I'd say it's accurate.
Yeah. I have a couple of characters who will have to pry my Demi headcanons out of my cold dead hands. Because I just think that it fits them perfectly, you know?
Yeah. Yes, it does. I'm thinking of a few characters myself now too, and I'm like, yeah. It's like I'm either with this idiot or I'm not. Like with certain characters I've definitely come across, or they've been like, I'm not interested in this. And then they're like, okay, I've been in this relationship once, and then I'm gonna go back to it. It's like, it's not a problem. And I'm like, okay. I don't know why I'm pretending like I'm talking to these characters, but I've been in lockdown too long.
I do. No, I mean, I was in Shadowhunters fandom, and, you know, there was Alec Lightwood, who was, like, on the TV show. He was, like, early 20s, and he never had so much moth at a date, and he didn't seem to miss it. You know, like, he could have dated despite being in love with, you know, with his best friend, kind of. He could have dated anyway, but he didn't. Yeah. He just didn't want to. And then he found someone who reciprocated his feelings. And then he was like, maybe this whole sex thing is interesting anyway.
That's a very fair way of looking at it. Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, you see that so seldom on TV these days, you know, like characters who are allowed to be like virgins and not unhappy about it.
I know, right, yeah. It's certain shows I've watched, they've kind of got through with that and it works. But no, I understand. I'm personally not ace or demi, but I can completely understand. And something that's one of the sexualities we need better representation on, and that's something that, like, I don't think that's really, like, I mean, we need better representation at all times on everything, to be honest.
Yeah.
That's one of the ones that's really, really, like, at the bottom of the list. And I'm like, hey,
yeah,
this comprises of a lot of people, please.
I mean, there's people who tell me that I'm not queer because I find men attractive, but I find men attractive in, you know, like, one degree removed. Don't touch me. I don't want to date you. I don't want to have sex with you. No, I just like looking at you when you're on, you know, like through a screen. That's the best of both worlds. It's like when I can look at pretty men on my screen. That's how I like them.
I know a lot of people who would agree with you there, and whoever told you that being asexual does not make you queer, I don't have a response that's not involving something crass. So they can pick a fight with my angry pet cat. I've actually got an angry pet cat. They can pick a fight with her, and she'll defend the aces.
Yeah, I only figured it out like when I was in my early 30s, you know, that the fact that I'd had like three really short relationships and there was nothing sexual much going on and I just didn't miss it and it was completely okay, that didn't mean that I was somehow broken or that I hadn't met the right one yet. But that was just not something that I wanted, that I needed. I was in my early 30s by the time I figured it out. So when people come to me and are like, oh, that's not something real, you just, like I said, you just haven't met the right person yet. Then I I'm secure enough and grow, you know, adult enough to be like, I have no fucks to give you. It's like, just go away. It's like, no. no ignorant person, but I just feel it's so bad for like teenagers or something who, you know, who are just figuring things out. And so representation.
Yes, we've gone on a side track. We got sidelined.
Obviously. You listen to my podcast, you know what happened.
I know, I was like, I was enjoying this, and then I realized, I was like, I'm on one of the famous.
And usually I'm kind of like the one who's like, oh, oopsie, nice of you to rein me in. But, you know, like it's a pet project of mine. It's like going on about representation. But just along those lines to make it more relevant. It's like, have you, like in the adaptations that you've seen, have they been like portrayed as queer in any way?
Ah, yes, I can now pull out my other two flashcards. I'm gonna go with the musical first. In the musical there's a lot of banter between them, and during the song Café d'Abbassé, Red and Black. I'm going to use the English titles of these songs. I'm sorry. You guys can all fight me later. Please don't. For example, Grand Tour calls Don Juan. I'm going through all of the whys first before I get to the... This is like a very long-winded way to answer your question, if that's all right. There's just, I've got lots of quotes from songs, but I will not, I'll just skip some of them. But it's like, Grandio, put that bottle down, and then the response is, give me brandy on my breath and I'll breathe them all to death. That's my example. And also, Grandio encourages Marius's verse in Red and Black, singing the actual red and black bits when he's going, I feel my soul on fire. I've been caught singing. Grand Hero tries to look for bullets instead of Gavroche, but in the song where Gavroche dies, and Andreas is trying to stop them both, but Gavroche thinks this is in the UK version. And there's a very shippy song, like in the musical, and it's called "Drink with Me." And it's our section, or Grantio's section. And he basically asks, he turns to Andreas and he goes, could your death mean nothing at all? Is your life just one more lie? Will the world remember you? Like.
So he's serenading, basically.
Yeah, with he's serenading him. And in the 20th anniversary version, he's crying. This is the only verse in this entire song that actually openly provokes Andreas, and he turns around and goes, Grand Tour, that's enough. And he's like, and he just starts crying. And then in during versions of this song, in the 25th anniversary concert, Ramin Karimloo, who's playing Andreas, strokes Hadley Fraser's face and rests their foreheads together, and then they walk off for the rest of the song.
Is stuff available on YouTube or something?
Yeah.
Then please, links.
I will find this link. I don't know if this... I am just going to say I am not 100% certain if...
That would be awesome.
Yes, this is Ramin Karimloo. This is it. I don't know. I'm going to just leave this open and then I'll send this link to you afterwards, because I don't know how to copy links without opening a web page on Firefox.
Sure. No worries. Just, you know, I'll put it, if I get it, then it will be awesome to put that in the show notes. But, you know, I know obviously that musicals, they're not always available for online viewing, as everyone who wanted to see Hamilton. It's all too well.
Yeah, he's, this concert, it was actually, it's a DVD of it in the UK. I'm not sure if it's available in other countries. But I've got a copy of it in my bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
And during some other things, during the empty chairs and empty tables in the UK, they stand next to each other. So if anyone doesn't know, again, they all die. And Marius sings this song called "Empty Chairs and Empty Tables" and like there's like a gauze thing behind him, and all of the actors who play the Amis are standing behind the gauze, like literally meant to be ghosts.
No.
Yeah, and they're always standing next to each other. Also,
no.
The actors in the US anniversary touring cast, they're married. They got married.
No, really? That is so cool.
They started dating and then they got married. Well, like they were dating while the touring cast was happening. And
so cool.
Yeah.
It's like all our fan fiction dreams coming alive, you know, when people write these AUs, you know, like set in theater or something and on movie sets and the actors fall in love. See, it happens. It happens in reality.
Yes. it's great. In the movie, I've got like one of the things I've seen certain fans have a gripe about is the fact that Granto is not meant to be pretty. So I'm going to comment on that a little bit on this in this next section, but it's okay. It's okay. Because Granto, he's a pretty boy, but he's also played by George Blagden. So it more than evens out. George Blagden is the captain of the E&R ship. He is fantastic. And I'm going to get to him in a moment, but he's fantastic. unfortunately, in the movie, they cut Granto a section of Drink With Me because...
Aww.
International audiences, probably.
Great.
Yeah, not great.
Can't lose viewers in China for our tragic French musical.
About revolution.
But I'm sure that was a huge success over there.
Yeah. But to kind of like even the odds again, they are given their book death, even up to Grantaire like staggering up to him from the table in the corner, mm-hmm. and they're okay. then laid out side by side in Turning, which is the song mm-hmm. we see all their bodies. But honestly, the best thing that came out of that movie as a shipper was George Blagden. He read the book and ships it so hard, and I'm going to get into how. Occasionally, you'll come across actors who are like, yes, let's support the LGBT ship in this. No, this guy just literally just like picked up the entire fandom of this pairing and went, this is my baby. like Lion King style with the on Pride Rock. he decided that Granto was in love with Andreas, and he actually was about to approach Aaron Tveit, and who played Andreas. And he was like, I'm not sure what exactly was going on. He was talking. He said, oh, I want to talk to you about something. And Aaron Tveit was like, yeah, that's fine. And then got distracted and was talking to somebody else. And while he was standing there, George Blagden decided, rather than make it a two-sided, like, relationship, he was content with playing it with, like, an unrequited lover and just then walked off. And just ended, like, okay, this is fine, and walked it off.
I don't need you for this.
Yeah, it's like, I can single-handedly hold the ship on my own. And he, on his YouTube channel, on George Blagden's YouTube channel, he did a cover of I Will Follow You Into the Dark by Death Cab for Cutie. But he changed the second verse so it was all relevant to Granto and Andreas' relationship. Like, I'm not going to sing it because I feel like everyone is tone deaf after I just destroyed their eardrums with my singing. But it's like... Instead of like saying, I got my knuckles bruised by the lady in black, I got my feelings bruised by the leader in red. And
oh, okay. Yeah, that's definitely not being subtle.
Yeah. and then when he was singing Versailles, not singing, performing, acting
in
as...
In Versailles, yeah.
Yeah. He went to Paris and he walked to the place where the barricade was, like... The fans have all worked out where the barricade was in Paris. And he walked there singing his cut section of Drink With Me on the night of the 5th of June, and then put it up on Twitter.
Wow. You have to send me those links.
Oh, they're in the doc.
Okay, awesome. Great. That's fantastic. I can't believe it. Wow. I mean, sometimes, you know, there are actors who are like, oh yeah, yeah, I can totally see how that can be played that way, how them can be seen like this and stuff, you know. But then there's these very few people who are like, oh yeah, oh yeah, I totally played this gay. So gay.
Yeah. And he is, it's the fact that he was like, it's the fact that he didn't talk to the director, he didn't talk to anybody, and he essentially went, I own this ship now. I'm gonna be just as much of a fangirl and squee about this as everyone else.
Yeah. It reminds me of Oscar Isaac and
Yes.
He's like, I played a love story. I don't know what Disney was doing, but I played a love story.
Yes. And that's when you do that, it's great. Oscar Isaac and George Blackton are the only two I've seen them do that with, and I'm trying to think of like other there's some ones where they've reported it, like have turned out to be fake, sadly, but like no.
Last episode, I haven't listened yet. Rachel just, she mentioned that the actor who played Brainiac 5, he apparently also says that he totally played him as having a crush on Winshot, and that he shipped that's his preferred ship other than Brainiac's canon love interest.
Oh my god, I need to catch up. Okay, I should explain. As I was driving home, I was listening to the Booth and Brennan episode, and then I stopped just at the start of the Winchlot and Brainiac episode. So that is literally my next podcast. I'm like...
So I spoiled it for you, I'm sorry.
It's cool. This is like, do you want this taster of what you're going to get? Yes?
But yeah, sorry, I interrupted you. So yeah, we get very few of these actors.
Yeah, no, it's great when you do get these actors. And it's so much, like, it's just someone else I can think of who is 100% like shipper on deck, not shipper on deck, shipper, like shipper trash for a character they played, is Lin-Manuel Miranda in Hamilton with John Lawrence. He was like, he was like making joke of, I want all your fan art and I've read all of your fics. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because like that Alexander Hamilton and Hamilton Lawrence ship, I mean, that was sailing like well before Hamilton because of the letters they wrote.
Yes. Those letters are not straight, and they also have that like Greek queer coding in it, and it's like, honey, as I said in queer world, those letters, definitely not straight. Can't do straightness. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Oh, but I am very much looking forward to checking out that George Blackton being the captain of the ship.
Yes, I will try to. Remind me to, there's someone on Tumblr compiled all of his Twitter tweets about, like, his responses to fans about Grantor and Andras. Like, someone's compiled all of his tweets, and they're just great.
Awesome. Yeah, so, other than George Blackton, what's the fandom? Like, is it, you said it's pretty active, like, one day a year?
Yeah, it's interesting, because, like, I definitely remember joining in like 2013 and being like, it was active then, and then it kind of, like all fandoms, when they like when a big event happens, it's huge, and then it kind of goes off into. But at the same time, it's interesting because I've come across people in real life who are friends of a friend who ship Grantor and Andras. So it's not. It's like it's one of like those ships that it's big enough in its own way, but it's not. It's not Kirk and Spock level of, like, you know, everyone knows somebody who ships Kirk and Spock. But it's like, I have, like, met one or two people who are like, yes, I totally get Les Mis and the... But with, like, the state of fandom, I went on the... It was actually, like, I don't know whether this is kind of going into, like, real-life territory, but that when I went on there on Friday, there was a lot of infighting about what to do because of the current situation in America. And like what rules we should be following by, and like whether fandom was a safe space to explore that. And like most of the fans were like, no, don't don't, but there were some who were, yeah, so, yeah, you want, please cut that if you want, but I'm just explaining, like, that's what it was like on Friday. But
that, I think that's some a question that all fandoms have to ask themselves, like these days. Like,
yeah.
I've seen like there've been whole ficatons about, like, you know, lockdown fic, and just I
other
don't
stuff.
Want to read that right now.
Yeah,
it's too soon. But for other people, it's probably very cathartic writing it. You
yeah,
know, just kind of getting it, putting it out, maybe turning it into something funny and fluffy instead of the horror show that we're living. It's like, it's, you know, kind of maybe,
yeah.
I get why people want to do it, but I personally don't really want to read it right now.
Same, and with Les Mis, they were talking about the riots, and it's like, guys, this is, like, it to me, it kind of trivializes something that people are literally, like, suffering from. And I'm like, if you want to use, what I said was, if you want, I'm not sure that if someone comes onto my Tumblr now and they're like, oh, what has Paralogue said about this? I think that it's a very much a situation where, if you want to do something in the spirit of Enjolras and, well, not necessarily Enjolras, you should definitely be, like, looking out for your fellow man and helping out with the situation in America and being a generally good person in face of all of the awfulness that's going on there. And I'm actually doing a stream tonight regarding that, like, after this. It's a busy night. And there's currently, like, so there's people who are, I've seen people say, we should not be having a touch between fandom and real life at all. I've had people who are like, having activism and fandom, which is where I'm at, is good. Having it all combined. It's like, it's that was currently the thing, the situation on Friday. But at the same time, there's like also, it's interest, like I went on the fandom tag a couple of hours ago. And to be fair, it's just like, the main thing I remember coming across was like, there's a lot of modern AUs, a lot of, I know that there's a reincarnation AU tag because I've gone down that like times in like the past decade. there's AUs I go and enjoy. I just unfortunately didn't decide to like put any of them in my racks. I'm sorry. I did look. I couldn't find the one I was thinking of.
So fandom it's not always just fun and games.
That's
and
fine.
Because we've been going on for a long time, I'm so sorry. because I was just wondering, because you mentioned the AUs, but I would have thought that there would be a lot of like canon divergences, like where they don't die, but I don't know, go off to live on a farm somewhere, I don't know.
Well, I've read two, but like, now I'm thinking about it, I'm trying to remember. I'm actually going to go on the AO3 tag.
I guess that's what I would write. It's like, we're like, I don't want them to die, so let's fix this.
The current highest top 5 tags are modern setting and canon era. I know some people who actually enjoy the fact they die. Like, it actually, like, brings them some catharsis, and I'm like, I can understand this, but I'm not in a place right now where that kind of angst is my, I don't want to yuck on your yums. I kind of want to sit in my corner. I've got some stuff going on offline that's like, I don't mix those things.
Yeah. And I generally prefer my fic with happy endings. It's just, you know, I also like my movies with happy endings, my books. I'm just generally a happy ending type of person. It can be torturous to get there. That's fine. Just give me a happy ending.
Yes. I mean, I'm in a completely different fandom right now, and basically the entirety of the fandom just went, well, that ending didn't happen. They ended up together, and it's the It fandom, and they're like, well, that ending didn't happen.
Absolutely.
This is fine. It's like, and I've got a friend who's like, one of my friends online, her mission statement is, I just want them all to run off together and drive off together in a car. And even that sometimes is a bit difficult. So yeah, no, I'm with you.
Yeah.
The world's serious enough right now. Let's at least have some Yeah. Abby, I mean, I've written a Les Mis AU. I'm not gonna. It's turned into actual fiction since then. Like, it's gone into an actual like level of book. So I'm like, I don't really want to spoil too much. But it's like, yes, no, we're gonna make them suffer, but they're gonna be. Trust me, I've got a thing. They're gonna be happy about it. Yeah, they're gonna be together, but they're gonna suffer first. But they're gonna be together.
Have you written any Les Mis fic that people can read?
Yeah, not. I mean, as I mentioned, it's turned into an actual, like, because it started off as a reincarnation AU.
Mm-hmm.
But then I kind of realized that the characters are in the public domain. And I went, if I put in these characters from the public domain and these characters, I hypothetically have a book series.
Okay.
Yeah. So I currently have a book series, like, it's, I want people to know it's in no way, like, a comprehensive shape or form. I actually have a completely different book series that's in much more, like, you can work out what's going to happen there. But it's, I'm very much, like, it's a passion project in so much, I keep coming back to it, like, every 10 months or so and go, oh, yes, this. Now, if I were to add this and this and this and go back and rejig the sequence so I have that all make sense. Yeah. Great. And then I get distracted by something for 10 months. And then I come back and I'm like, ah, yes, this. Now, it's, I'm trying to not spoil or any of it. That's why I'm being like,
yeah.
But it has, some fans are going to start screaming blue murder at me now. But it has, Andras is a doctor. And he's friends with somebody who can turn into a dragon. And Grantaire is a police, like, sketch artist. And there's, like, a solving crime element to it. And all of these things, there's, like, it's a bit like Harry Potter with, like, there's a magical world, but it's not, like, there's not, like, an actual magical government as the magic. But there's, like, people who hold the peace. And...
Mm-hmm.
In things that happen in no particular order, they end up learning, like, they both learn that they're reincarnates of these characters. Andreas learns that he's a much older reincarnate than he thinks. Like, he goes back a lot longer than just 18. He's important. And, meanwhile, there's, like, the Amis are in it, and, Eponine is a panther shapeshifter because why not? I say so. It's my world. I'm allowed to go, like, this is my world where this happens. And my problem is, people will tell you this about me. I am very hard about, like, I've literally had people, like, stop me from, like, telling spoilers. So I'm having the big fan moment of, like, no spoiler, unfortunately. I have written fic for it, but it's going to become something a bit more than that, if that makes sense. Hello?
Oh, that's pretty cool, though.
Yes.
I have come to terms with the fact that I will never, ever write a book. I'm just not cut out for it. Like, yeah, anything. I'm very happy writing a few thousand words. That's fine. Anything longer becomes painful.
That is me. But what my lucky thing is, the person I'm going to actually, my next link in the chain, she's very good at, like, unintentionally getting me into a writing mood, and I'll be like, yes, 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 this, and this, and this, and this, and also now, I'm now thinking about this thing I've been writing on and off for 5 years, and she's like, ooh, can I read some of it? And I don't know if she's actually ever read any of it, but she's basically my entirety of my, she's basically my beta for all of the things I read, but she's also my fellow fandom, she's my fandom buddy, where if I start screaming about something, or she starts screaming about something, we both start screaming about it.
Lovely. That is always so fun to have.
Yes.
So maybe we should move towards the recommendations, considering that we've been on for an eternity already.
Yes. 5 Ficrecs and a fave mm-hmm. author and a few videos, which is the George Blagden ones. So
awesome.
The Ficrecs. The first one is, the first two are basically the two of the first fics I ever read in the fandom. So while they may not be like the best writing or the best storytelling, they mean a lot to me. I have strong emotional connection. Mm-hmm. And the first one is Va attraper une étoile filante by Colonel Despard. And it's a canon divergence. Somehow the rebellion works. She kind of, by her own admission, just glosses over it. And it becomes a full-blown revolution. And Enjolras and Grante get together after that. But that's what that meat of it is. It's the entire fic is about them getting together after the rebellion. And it's during the early days of the Republic. So I think Grante becomes Enjolras' secretary, if I'm not mistaken. And that I originally read that on fanfiction.net, but I found an archive of our own. So
cool. Yeah.
I'm happy. I've got one that I haven't put in the link. I'll put that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But the second one is Worth of a Man by Storytellers, and that's on fanfiction.net. And it's the only one I have on fanfiction.net.
Don't discriminate. Fanfiction.net, completely valid website. Not one I use anymore, but yeah.
Same. I have a problem with eyesight, so I like either having the entirety of the fic on the screen and it all being mm-hmm. pitch dark, like having the dark background, which you can get on fanfiction.net. But I like knowing how long a fic is, and having that darkness. Anyway, the fic. It's to anybody who remembers this film, Shrek 4?
There were four?
One and two, which are really good. Three, which is awful. And four, which is actually decent.
Okay, I stopped paying attention after two. So
yeah, Shrek 4 would recommend. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's not perfect, but it's good. It's all right.
It's a Shrek AU, that is so cool.
Yeah, it's not quite an AU, but it uses the same trope, if that makes sense. I think when I was writing this, I couldn't think of a way to phrase this. And how I'm going to put this is, it's an AU to an AU fic. So in this AU, the musical / book is an alternate universe to what the real timeline is, according to like the fic. The real timeline is that Grante forces himself to sober up and go cold turkey for Enjolras. And of course, when you go cold turkey, he gets very ill. And he ends up, and Enjolras ends up finding him like that. And he ends up basically like looking after him. And this happens 1831. So it's like a year before the rebellion should have actually happened. So, and what happens, because Grante is sober, he gets better at holding his tongue when he's yelling vitriol, and uses his cynicism to make their rebel plans much better. And there's like a logical cause of effect then of how the revolution becomes, succeeds. They end up getting together, but Grante is shot during the fighting and that leaves him paralyzed. A few years later, a woman, and I'm going to say there is a trigger warning for racist stereotypes of gypsies. If that's not your thing, I totally understand. She asks him, does he want to go back in time to when he had, you know, had his legs? And then it's basically a race against, it's literally like similar to the plot of Shrek 4, it's like a race against time to get back to the other timeline. The third fic is it's a series. It's Fingers, Tongues and Inkwells by Benevolent Errancy, and it starts with Speak With Me, and it's, and this, again, I'm just going to put trigger warning for canon era ableism at the start, because unfortunately they didn't really understand disabilities very well in 1830s, but Grante is mute, and he turns up to an ABC meeting, and because he's mute, it sort of forces Enjolras to listen to him and not write him off. And it also forces Grante to have opinions because, you know, he's mute. And yeah. Eventually they learn language sounds forcing. Apologies, I butchered that. And then the last two is the penultimate one, apologies. The Subtle Grace of Gravity by Sami Azaz. And it's basically a space Medusa AU. It's set on the spaceship, and Andraris is trying to start a rebellion to take over the spaceship because he's never left that spaceship. And it's basically like they'd be on this spaceship for hundreds of years. And he's snooping around one day, and he literally finds a locked door and manages to open it. And inside he finds a man who literally he can't look at or he'll go nuts. And he finds out that man is the ship's archive, and he decides to save him. And that man is Grante. And then I'm not too happy because...
Such a cool concept.
Oh, it's so cool. Like, that is one of my... Yeah.
I keep thinking that why is there no TV show about, like, a generation spaceship? That would be so cool!
I can think of, like, one of... Like, the closer I get to certain Star Treks, but they're not... They've never been on there for an entire, like, couple of generations, and it's not like...
Yeah, like, show, basically. Set on the ship. It's kind of you know, like a locked room drama.
Yeah, except it's locked spaceship drama.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, that was just an aside, because I was thinking about this the other day.
Honestly, I'm with you on that. We need some more interesting... space material. Like, I love Star Trek, and I sort of like Star Wars, but we need some... Let's rejig the formulas some bit. But anyway.
Killjoys. Have you watched Killjoys? Watch Killjoys.
I will write that down in a moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be my favourite fic, but unfortunately the top spot is taken by All You Have Is Your Fire by Lady Ragnall, and it's a superhero soulmate AU. Like, first words that they say to you appear on your arm variety. And Andros and Grante run into each other while doing vigilante work, and they say the words. And they decide not to reveal their secret identity because vigilantes are outlawed in Paris due to something we find out is Fantine and Valjean did. But we don't know what that thing is until towards the end. But they're both curious about each other, and soon there's lots of identity porn, and... Mm-hmm. Soon it all, it's just all of, like, the different plot lines start, like, folding in, and it just, some of the identity porn is great. Also, this is the only fan art, one of the only published fan arts I've ever done. So, if you want to see my fan art, I will link it, because I forgot to link it. But it's also, it's awful, but it's because she did a crossover. The author did a, what's the thing where they... like, not commissions, but, like, she did a thing where you commission it, but it's for free, I think. I don't remember.
An auction or something?
No. I don't remember. I think it was, like, she was, like, I'm writing, I'm in a writing mood, but I don't know what to write. Give me some ideas, basically.
Oh, just, like, prompting.
Yeah. And I suggested a crossover with that and The Flash.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I drew fan art for that crossover. And I'm sorry, my art styles are...
You're speaking to someone who draws like a five-year-old. So, you know, it can only be better.
I mean, I prefer drawing. I prefer writing over drawing. I just get incredibly anxious when I'm left to draw because I'm so slow at it. And also, it's a bit like... I have to, like, sit for hours and focus, and I feel very awkward then because then a lot of my friends are much faster artists than I am, and I'm like, I know it's not a race, but also, Lady Ragnall, going back to the fit correct, Lady Ragnall, she's my favourite author in this fandom. Mm-hmm. She has actually got an AU that she made that's basically become a trope, like a fandom level trope. That's been used in U-Ship Finn and Ray, I want to say.
Oh.
And U-Ship that OT3.
Yeah, OT3, yeah.
She's got a, her fic, like her, the fic she did for Les Mis sprung a mm-hmm. fic that, like, inspired a fic using exact same, like it's a different variation of soulmate trope that is used in a OT3 Finray Poe fic. Like,
yeah.
I will also send you that link too.
Yes, please. Please. Because I'm a big fan of Finn Has Two Hands.
Yes! Like, oh my god.
But yeah, I, actually, it's so, like, Star Wars is not a fandom that I read a lot in, but I will definitely read this. It's just so funny to me how fandom is like soulmate tropes. Yay!
Yes. That's like a big trope in the Les Mis mm-hmm. fandom too. And I forgot, that's probably a fandom thing that I forgot to add. Yeah, that soulmate tropes, that mm-hmm. it's up there. I've definitely seen a few of those.
I guess it's especially, it's interesting because they're so different, like they wouldn't necessarily spend time together otherwise, but they have this connection.
Yeah. Yeah. Or in certain cases you have people who, like Grant or Andres, who literally, they have 5 minutes until the end and then they decide to start together, getting together, and all the fans are like, guys, no, we're meant to be getting together, like, not right now. 20 minutes ago would have been better. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm with you there. I'm like, I put all my ships, I'm like, they could have been together for years. And instead, we've got this disaster. Are you happy? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I haven't seen any of the adaptations, but in my mind, after what you've described, I just have this hugely romantic scene, death scene in my head.
I mean, I'm gonna point out, like, in the it's in certain fandoms, it's very, like, you can feel the oh no moment, but also you kind of have, like, it's also a death scene, so also you get some really bizarre shots in the movie has one of the most bizarre shots in it, and I basically in the musical, Andras ends up like flung over the barricade, meant to be symbolizing, you know, the fall of the rebellion, and they achieve this in the musical by flinging him out of a window. And I'm like, you get points for trying, but also what? Why is he out of a? It's just like he's half dangling out of a window, and you're like, at some point, I'm not a scientist, but I'm pretty sure that's not how gravity works.
Come on, gravity, schmavity. It's like free to be ignored in favor of, I don't know, singing.
Yes, and bizarre, and the emotions of the moment.
Yes, drama.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. So, any other fix, or do you mention? You said you also have some other stuff to rec.
Do I? Yes. I'm gonna put. I've got links to George Blagden mm-hmm. singing "Drink with Me" in Paris. That's on my list. I've now also put the Tumblr post where it's just a compilation of his.
Very good.
Squeeze.
Very good.
His "I Will Follow You Into the Dark" cover.
I love that song. I've vidded that song.
You vidded it.
Yeah, with the class, that Doctor Who spin-off.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, with Charlie and Mateusz.
Ah, yes. I've seen it used in, it's often used in quotes, like I've got a friend who does beautiful mm-hmm. gifts, and she's used, like, "I Will Follow You Into the Dark" in one of her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because Mateusz in the show literally says to Charlie, "Don't go where I can follow," which is like, that's literally in that song. So I'm like, yeah. I was like, I have to do this, although it hurts. I have to do it.
Yeah, that's a mood. Oh dear.
But yeah. Yeah, so we have all these lovely stuff that I will put in the show notes and also read myself.
I'm looking for the Star Wars one for you.
Awesome. And I will definitely check out the wonderful George Blackstone.
Yes. Captain of the ship.
Yes. Yes. And I don't know, do you have anything else that you want to say about this fandom authorship. I mean, I'm sure you could go on for a lot longer, but I think we should probably wrap it up.
I've got nothing. Nothing that I haven't already said. And
okay.
Just, it's a sweet ship. Well, not a sweet ship because they die. It's a ship that means a lot to me. And also, there's the fandom drama is very, it's not massive as far as, I'm very much a person who kind of sticks out of drama, so as far as I know, there is no drama. And just ship and, as you say, ship and let ship, and it'll be okay. It's going to be okay.
Awesome. And you already mentioned that you have someone for me to talk to next.
Yes, I have my writing buddy, Calliope's Quill. And I don't know what she's talking about yet. We were talking about it last night, and I don't know what she's going to be talking about. She's very nice, and also I'm excited for listening to her podcast. And I really love the show. If I haven't said that enough times, I really love
Thank
the show.
You. Thank you so much. I'm so glad. Sometimes I feel as if I'm kind of speaking into the void. But then I get sometimes I do get a little bit of feedback back, and that's really nice.
I just like the show. And it's, as I mentioned in previous conversations, it was one of the things that the show did was to kind of push Calliope and I into we are making a podcast together, and it's going to be great. And this podcast is awesome, and we're going to do this, but also talk about queer theory.
Awesome. That is so amazing. That is so awesome. But yeah, so if your podcast is released before the episode drops, please send me the link so I can put it out there.
You can find, I can do, where you can also probably find the show when it goes up, which is on writtenlastminute.com, which is my game reviews website. And it's going to, when we publish it, it's definitely going to end up on.
Yeah, so we can find you on that website.
Yeah.
Where else can we find you?
If you type in Paralogue Anoil into Tumblr, Archive of Our Own, trying to think where else people can find me. It's mostly Tumblr I'm on. And again, Written Last Minute and Queer Waters.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
if you just Google Paralogue Anoil, you'll find me. Yeah. And that's, I'll just spell it out for non-Welsh speakers, Perlogannwyl. Simples.
Yeah, I mean, it's like me. I've been Shirazade so long. It's just me. So thank you so much for doing this for me. I really, really appreciate it. And you have been the best prepared interview partner ever.
Yay! Gold star!
you are a gold star interview partner.
Yay! I've been so excited to be on this show that, as I mentioned, I had to put my energy into something, or my D&D crew yesterday would have been like, Paralogue, please, we love you, but shut up. but it was good because there was lots of squee that happened last night, so they were squeeing about other things.
But yeah, so we're going to take a leaf from their book, and we're going to shut up now, okay?
Yes. All right.
Bye.
Bye.
I took a trip on a great big ship to a land across the sea. To a land across the sea, the sea, the sea, the sea.
This wraps up the 36th episode of the Shipping Podcast. Wasn't Paralogue Anoil a great guest? And I'm not only saying this because she had so many nice things to say about this podcast. It might be difficult to believe, but I actually cut out some lengthy chunks. As you could probably tell, talking with her was easy, and I hope you enjoy the final product. As always, you can find all links in the show notes on shippingcast.fandomish.net. That's fandomish.net. As mentioned in the intro, this is the last episode for a few weeks. I'm taking a short break and plan on returning on August 14th, earlier for Patreon supporters. I'm wishing all of you a good summer or winter, depending on where you are, and will be back for the new episode with Calliope's Quill about Beauregard and Yasha from Critical Role. Also, if you're interested, I'm always open for volunteers for my backup list.
You can follow and get in touch on Tumblr as ShippingCast, on Twitter as Shipping_cast, and you can email me on theshippingcast@fandomish.net. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what you think of the podcast and the ships we've been covering. You can find the podcast on all major and some minor podcasting platforms. A full list can be found on shippingcast.fandomish.net/subscribe. As mentioned before, if you want to get the next episode the moment I finish it, at least one day early, you can become a patron on patreon.com/shippingcast. This also has some other nice rewards, like extra episodes on other fandom topics, and that way you can help me pay for the necessary pro accounts for the podcast. Also, I'm hoping to one day be able to afford transcripts to make the podcast more accessible. There's also the option to send me a one-time donation on ko-fi.com/shirazade or via PayPal to webmistress@shirazade.net. All these options are also described on shippingcast.fandomish.net/support. And you can help me totally for free by leaving reviews or simply spreading the word to other fans. I'm Shirazade, spelled Shirasade, and you can find me as such on Tumblr, AO3, YouTube, Pillowfort, Dreamwidth, and on shirazade.net, although I'm not active on all of them. I've also joined Mastodon as shirazade@fandom.inc with a K. The podcast artwork was created by the wonderful Little Zion. The music is Sailor Song by the Peerless Quartet. Thanks so much for listening, and remember, you are the captain of your ship.